On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Just a few years back, when housing prices were soaring and interest rates were at historic lows, millions of Americans grabbed adjustable-rate mortgages with super bargain basement rates. For many, it was the only way to jump on the American housing train. Now, that train is slowing big time. Home sales and prices are slumping in many markets. Interest rates are up, and so are foreclosures, as the first big wave of adjustable-rate mortgage holders face the music. Sharply higher monthly payments or a scramble to refinance and push out the pain as housing prices stall. It may be you, it may be your kids, it may be your home's value that takes the hit. Up next on Point, American housing and the adjustable rate pinch. Joining me first today from New York is Sibel Weiser. She covers real estate for Money Magazine. Sibel, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Thomas. Nice to be here.
So the adjustable rate pincher is starting to pinch a little bit. Describe for us what's happened. When did people, at what rate did they get in, when, and what are they facing now?
Well, I mean, 2 years ago, you could take a very short-term adjustable rate mortgage for, under 5%. And in the past 2 years, those rates have really climbed. I mean, now even the shortest, even an adjustable rate mortgage that adjusts monthly, you're going to be paying almost 6% for. So there's really not a lot of bargains to be found.
So look at a home, at a family budget. They've had an adjustable rate. I don't know. It's $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 mortgage. What kind of jump might they be facing in their monthly mortgage bill now?
They could be facing hundreds of dollars higher right now. We've talked to some people in the last few months that are really getting slammed, payments that are hundreds of dollars higher than what they signed up with originally.
How widespread were adjustable rate mortgages? What portion of people have used them?
Oh, gosh. Well, that really varies around the country. But, in some markets, you were talking 50, 70% of, new mortgage customers who are getting adjustable rate mortgages, a lot of those also being interest only, too. We could talk about that if you like.
So markets adds
a whole other level of risk.
Interest only? Well, you're saying some markets, presumably those were high priced markets. What, California, where?
Yeah, California, New York, Florida, pretty much all up and down the coast. And then you've got the whole big, the center of the country, which is, not taking a lot of those risks. They haven't quite seen the they sort of missed some of that housing boom that we saw on the coast, but they're probably going to be feeling a lot less pain on the way down.
Now the interest only, that's yet another twist on it, as you say. How does that work?
Well, with an interest-only mortgage, you pay only the interest on the mortgage, not the principal, for the first 10 or 15 years of the mortgage. What happens after that, and these are often taken in conjunction with an adjustable rate mortgage, after that, you need to start paying back both interest and principal. So the amount you pay per month is going to jump even higher. And if you've also taken an adjustable rate, you could be seeing a gigantic leap in the payments. Plus, you haven't accrued any home equity in that time.
I'm looking here at numbers that say that next year another $1 trillion in mortgage loans will readjust. We'll hit a new level. How are most people responding to this when the adjustment comes and suddenly they're faced with a higher mortgage bill? What are people doing?
Well, here's the thing: is that some people, of course, depending on what they're looking at, they may be able to make room in their budget for this. A lot of people are really starting to worry about this now, and they're thinking about refinancing. Maybe I can get another mortgage. Trouble is, with rates having gone up as much as they have, people, there's not a lot of deals out there. There's not a lot of places you can go to find a rate that's cheaper than you're paying today. So, a lot of people are left in a potentially tight spot.
Where do rates stand now for fixed and for adjustable rate? I don't know, 15 or 30. What's it look like, Sibel?
Right now, for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, you're heading to almost an average of 7%. I think it's like around 6.7%. Now, historically, that's still not that high, but compared to what it was a few years ago, it looks really high. And on an adjustable rate mortgage, and, you know, you're talking about the shortest adjustment, you know, you're still looking at almost 6%. So, you know, you're not really saving a lot right now by taking an adjustable rate mortgage.
So what are people doing? I mean, I'm reading here some people turning now to 50-year mortgages to try and get out of the trap. Not many yet, but is that some other new sort of tools and packages on the scene here? Are they a good idea?
Well, lenders are definitely trying to, you know, see what they can do to bring people's payments down. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, that's something they're offering. You know, people, of course, are, you know, still taking interest-only loans. So, yeah, they're stretching out the term. They're putting off paying principal. These are all methods you can do. I mean, you know, unfortunately, the reality of a longer-term loan is you're just going to be paying more interest in the end.
Overall, but then people need to make it through the immediate. I see sales figures down for single-family homes, down almost 4.5% from last year. For apartments, condos, down more than 6.5%. The biggest number of unsold homes in this country ever. What are the implications beyond the immediate family household facing this mortgage? What are the implications for the whole housing market of these waves of adjustable rate mortgages that are going to come due for a step up?
Well, the fear is that a lot of people will realize that they can't make their payment, you know, that stretching out the term or putting off the principal is not going to cut it, and that they'll all need to, suddenly there'll be this big rush of people who are trying to sell their homes all at once. What that would do in turn is, you know, continue to make the inventory of homes balloon and depress prices. So that's the sort of worst case scary scenario. Now, you know, the good news is likely that probably won't happen. You know, for one thing, we're talking about a very big country, and this is not a problem in every market like we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, overall in the country, you're probably not going to look at a gigantic, you know, collapsing bubble. Some places, though, you know, you could see, you know, a pretty significant depression of prices. And, you know, and then that's scary for a lot of people.
So we'll keep our fingers crossed. Say a prayer for the households facing this directly and scratch our heads about how it's going to affect the whole housing market. Sibel Weiser at Money Magazine in New York, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I want to turn now to Carl Case. He's with me in the studio, professor of economics at Wellesley College, founding partner in the real estate research firm Fisser of Case Schiller Weiss, Inc. He's followed this market for a long time. Carl Case, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
So are you feeling the pain of the adjustable rate millions in this country these days?
Well, I think it's a new phenomenon. If you go back a number of years, we were addicted to the fixed rate self-amortizing mortgage, which you had a locked-in payment forever, very stabilizing to the housing market in the sense that if people wanted to sell in a rising interest rate environment, they didn't because they had this fixed rate. Now,
and you wanted to hang on to that because that looked like a greater and greater value as rates went up.
Right, and people resist downward price movements. They don't want to sell their house into a downdraft. But when their payment goes up, they're in a different spot. And if you look at countries that don't have fixed-rate mortgages like Canada, you can see in rate spikes that people have to sell. It becomes an auction market, and it can be rough.
Auction market, that is, people selling for whatever the market will pay rather than hunkering down with their good, low, fixed mortgage and weathering the storm.
Exactly. If you look at the housing market in down cycles, it's very different than other markets. Most markets, if there's an excess supply, price falls right away. It's not true in the housing market because sellers won't sell. They know what their house is worth. You know, I've had economists call me up and say, I can't sell my house. I'll buy it at a price.
but it may be more volatile now that we have so many more adjustable rate mortgages out there. As you say, people will not be able necessarily to sit there and just take the hit of the higher monthly payment.
That's exactly right.
What could that mean for the overall housing market?
Well, we don't know because it's still true that 78% of the mortgage paper outstanding being held in this country is fixed rate.
That's a stabilizing factor, and a big one.
That's a big one. But a majority in the volatile East and West Coasts has been variable rate. And a lot of that is protected. As Sibel said a minute ago that the coasts were very vulnerable. Mm. The real declines in price and the high default rates have actually been in the Midwest.
Where the economy and jobs have been in trouble.
Right, because when you get in trouble with a job and at the same time your mortgage payment is going up, you tend to find yourself in foreclosure more frequently. The East and West Coast so far are protected, at least the mortgage markets are protected.
Why?
By a lot of price increases since people bought those homes. So they can sell the house still get out and pay off the mortgage because they've had a good
There's
bit
been
of appreciation.
There's such a big run-up that they've got a buffer.
Exactly.
But if people, if it begins to drift down, that buffer goes away, and then the dynamic flips to what?
Well, that's the $64,000 question. We don't know exactly how this market's going to behave because it'll depend on the economy itself. We've never really had a housing bust until we've had a recession. And if this slowdown turns into a recession, partially, I might add, as a result of slowness in the housing market.
Because housing has floated this country's economy in many dimensions for the last half dozen years.
Absolutely. So if the number of jobs declined sharply, partially as a result of the real estate cycle itself, it could be rough for the next couple of years.
Carl Case, have we ever faced a situation like this in this country before with this percentage, this portion of adjustable rate mortgages sitting out there ready to spike up?
It's not only the variable rate mortgages, it's the advent of what's called the subprime market as well. We've expanded credit to keep this market afloat to portions of the population that were not well served before and now are. We've never tested that subprime market, and we've never tested this variable rate paper in a down real estate market. We've had 10 years of boom, and it's going to be a very interesting couple of years.
So between the variable rate, the subprime market, we're in new territory here. Are you feeling confident that we can dodge the bullet of a housing home price bust?
That's a tough question. I do think there's going to be downward pressure, and I'm completely convinced there's going to be a lot less economic activity around housing in the next couple of years, which is going to be negative for the economy. We're going to lose employment. But whether it turns into a downward bust depends on how quickly it corrects itself.
Joined right now from Philadelphia by Susan Wachter, a professor at the Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania, focused on real estate economics and housing finance. Susan Wachter, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Hello, Tom.
It's great to have you. Who described the sort of population of people who have turned to variable rate mortgage loans in recent years? What's the profile?
Well, increasingly, those who are going to variable rate are those who are affordability constrained, and that will be the lower end of the home buyer population. These are people who have moderate income. Maybe they have two earner incomes, but they are both workers, moderate income, and therefore very vulnerable to a downturn.
But you say they were constrained. It's an affordability issue here. This was their way to kind of jump on the train. Maybe they had no other way to afford.
No, that's exactly right. That we see this maybe third act of the housing market that we're now passing by with this price boom of this past year is really driven by these affordability products.
Now, interest rates are up, but they're not over the moon yet. Do you see a problem here, Susan Wachter, for individual households, for the national housing market, or regional?
Well, perhaps not for, I'm very hopeful that not for the national. That would be a really historical and very unprecedented and very troubling. Certainly regional markets and certainly demographic segments, there will be problems. The demographic segment that's most at risk is low to moderate income. If we have a regional recession, and even if not, if we have, you know, just the ordinary shocks that happen in life, even without interest rates going up, with these teaser arms, because there are families with teaser arms out there, and they're just not aware how much interest rates are going to go up on their mortgages, whether interest rates go up nationally or not.
Teaser arms, you're saying, that is, they're teased with a very low introductory rate on these mortgages, and then, of course, the pop-up.
Exactly.
After the
and that's beginning to happen now as we speak.
If it's low and moderate income households who are most affected by this, what does that mean for the housing market? Does it mean its impact would only occur in less expensive homes or not necessarily?
We just don't know. These arms and teaser arms are also in middle income areas, and the intersection, the interaction between these very high rising prices, which then may slow and the market slows, we are in unprecedented territory. We really don't know the regional impact yet.
Susan Wachter, Carl Case, a lot of listeners want to join us, and I want to get to their questions and issues here. Sue is calling from Sudbury, Massachusetts. Hi, Sue. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well. What do you know, Sue?
My husband and I have a seven-year ARM that I believe our rate is about 4.3, and we have 5 years left on the term, and I think about it every day that we need to pay this off. So we have a pretty aggressive strategy for investing a significant amount of money each year for the next 4 years. And we've already done this for the past 2 years in CDs to make sure that when the term is up that we just pay it off, because so, our our rate can max out about 14 or 15%, I think.
Well, so 4.3, that was pretty sweet. Now you're looking, you're nervous already, and it's 5 years down the road, and you're trying to save in advance so that when that hits you, you'll be ready for it.
Right, right. I'm currently a stay-at-home mom, and theoretically, I'll be back in the workforce at some point, but, you know, we certainly wouldn't want to be carrying something. You know, even going up to 6 or 7% seems high, so if it can max out at 14 or 15%, that's certainly not in a budget.
Carl Case, what do you say to Sue here? They seem to be, I mean, this seems like a pretty sensible plan. She's got a 4.3 rate. She's got several years. They're saving already, bracing for the hit that's going to come. Should she be in good shape?
She sounds like she's doing exactly the right thing. I mean, you've got to plan ahead, see these rates coming. There is a big debate about whether rates are going to go up and by how much. If they go up a lot, it will be a national phenomenon. It'll affect a lot of people. Many people, including people who are writing about the worldwide currency imbalances, are not predicting very rapid increases in interest rates. So if we had an 81 when the mortgage rate went to 18%
and I got my first mortgage, I remember it well.
22.9, we're all in trouble.
But if it holds a little steadier than that, Sue's worried about her 14 or 15% max. You're saying
the fact that she's worrying about it is a good thing, and the fact that she's planning for those rate increases will make her part of the success story of these things, because she's gotten a very low rate so far. But it's the people who can't plan for it, who don't plan for it, who have job problems coming down the line that we worry more about.
Sue Wachter, is this a typical profile, a 4.3% and bracing for the five-year-out storm, or are people, you know, with savings, or are many ARM holders not capable of doing that?
I think many are not. This is a good plan. There's also other options. If one's credit quality is good, you could refinance into a fixed-rate mortgage. That's something to keep in mind. Saving, of course, is a terrific idea because, among other things, it improves your credit score because you're not as reliant on credit cards. But keeping that credit score in a good situation so that when you need to sell your house or move, you have options is a part of a good plan.
So what would you say to Sue right now? She's got 4.3% for five more years. Should she go out and try and grab a fixed-rate mortgage or save for the hit when it comes?
Well, I can't give the particulars, but the response is I don't know all the details. But for one, that's really good. Sue knows her terms. A number of people don't know their terms, and that's the first thing. And second, it's highly dependent on whether Sue is planning on moving, perhaps moving up to a larger home if things go well. And then a adjustable mortgage is really the right way to go.
Well, Carl, are most people able to refinance? Can they prepay these variable rate mortgages or not?
One of the disturbing things about the new regime in mortgage lending is that there are a lot of prepayment penalties written into these mortgages. I've had friends who've gone to refinance only to discover that buried deep in the mortgage is a penalty of $25,000 or $30,000.
Ouch.
That has to be paid as the mortgages are refinanced. A lot of that's predatory lending, and it's very troubling.
It's a bump in the road. It might be hard to get around. Jim's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I listen to the show primarily to hear you.
It's great to have you, Jim. What do you think?
Well, I wanted to say that I'm a high school educated person. I didn't go to college, and I consider myself of average intelligence. And the idea of an adjustable rate mortgage sounds ridiculous to me, and I'm just an average guy. And I'm wondering, are the people to blame because they're greedy and they just want to own a home, or are the lenders to blame because they somehow convinced these people that it was a good idea? And I'll take my question off the air.
Okay, Jim, thanks for your call. Susan, Jim's old school. It sounds crazy to him. And he wonders, you know, who was pushing this? What was driving this? How do you respond?
Oh, well, Jim, that's a really good point. You know, many people will say it seemed like a good idea at the time. You know, we've even had some Fed chairmen who said this is a good idea, especially if you are planning it to be in your home for only a few years, then you get everything that you want. You have to, you know, get out and get a new mortgage anyway, and you'll get a cheaper mortgage. Just as a point, you know, there are many countries across the world where there are only adjustable rate mortgages. We are an exception with a fixed rate mortgage. And although it may at some points in the cycle be 100 or 200 basis points higher, you sure do get that insurance that you're not going to get hit with a surprise.
Carl Case, what about today? If someone's contemplating buying a home today, would you still recommend an adustable rate mortgage, or given these uncertainties, you know, try and lift the load of the fixed rate?
I'm I've spent a lot of time in school, and I'm still old school. I have a fixed rate mortgage, and I just believe in them. The problem is we've seen these low rates for such a long period of time, we don't recognize anymore what it was like back in the days when rates were high and when they took big jumps.
What a good deal a 6 or 7% mortgage rate may someday look like.
I had an 8.75% in 1976 that I kissed every year for 15 years.
When everything else was running much higher. Susan Wachter in Philadelphia at the Wharton School, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Thanks for opening up the scenario here.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Susan Wachter, Professor of Financial Management and Real Estate at the Wharton School. Joining us now from Boulder, Colorado, is Christopher Hudak. He's Housing Counseling Coordinator for the Boulder County Housing Authority. Mr. Hudak, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Your state, Colorado, had the highest number of foreclosures last year after Florida, and we've got foreclosure rates jumping up in lots of states right now. I see places jumping up 50, 60, even 100%, I think I saw in California. Do you have more people coming in with variable rate mortgage problems?
Yes, and actually we have the dubious distinction of being number one in the nation, according to RealtyTrack.com, for foreclosures since March of 2006.
Why is Colorado so vulnerable to foreclosure? What's going on there?
Well, I'll say it's exactly what you're looking at, these adjustable rate mortgages, variable rate mortgages, ARMs as they're called. Basically, people were getting into these low interest rate loans, and what catches up with people is human nature. And so catastrophic things happen, lose a job, illness, divorce, family breaks up somehow, or loses a family member. And these unforeseen things hit a family hard with adjustable rate mortgages. Can I give you a scenario?
Yes, please.
So, for instance, I saw a gentleman who came in, and he basically was a workaholic. He made sufficient income to pay his mortgage and was working about 70 hours a week, really dedicated to what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually in a helping profession. And his mortgage jumped up, the mortgage rate jumped, and the servicer did not notify him, as I believe they were supposed to, for the rate change. And he had been paying just the same old rate. He was sending it to Western Union because he was always running from one thing to another in his job. So his rate jumped up in January. And when he came to see me last month, or beginning actually of July, he was already 5 months behind.
Because and he didn't even know it. It had jumped up. He hadn't gotten the information. Working 70 hours a week and in a deep hole after 5 months, no doubt.
Exactly, because what happens is the mortgage company did not get a full payment, so they hold the payment in suspense until they get a full payment. And so what happens is that just kind of snowballs after a while, and then before you know it, you're 5 months behind.
Is that a crazy story? I mean, I'd picture that when it goes up, you'd get an envelope with a big red margin around it saying, hey, mister, hey, ma'am, you've got to pay more.
Not really. And what actually complicated the situation is that the servicer for the loan company was in India. So we're dealing with some folks who don't really understand the situation on the ground here in Colorado. So we're just seeing so many people come in with adjustable rate mortgages, interest only, you know, 30-15s. It's a 30-year it's a loan that appears as a 30-year fixed rate on paper, but actually comes due in 15 years.
Wow.
And there's a small balloon payment. So then also the 80-20 loans where they're putting 100% of the value of the home down, have one loan for 80% of the value and then a second loan for 20% of the value in order just to avoid the MIP insurance, and then they're getting into trouble normally with the second loan that was on that property or even the first because the first may be adjustable.
A lot of ways to get ahead and a lot of ways to get in trouble here. We're at 800-423-8255. Robert's calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
How you doing?
We're good. What do you know?
Well, my question is this. We are homeowners. We have two mortgages. One's a fixed rate and the other's a variable rate, second mortgage.
Okay.
About $75,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was looking to refinance to consolidate the two to a fixed rate. Now, I just heard one of your speakers, so about a 50-year loan.
Mm-hmm.
We only plan on being in our house for the next 4 to 5 years. Would it be best to refinance for a 50-year loan and save us money in payments or go to a 30-year loan?
Mr. Hudak in Boulder, Colorado, what about this 50-year mortgage that's now creeping onto the scene in some places? Robert wants to know if it's good for him.
Well, what I would say is to look at the details, because as the old adage goes, the devil is always in the details. And what you want to look at is your truth in lending statement for, and I would compare both the 30-year fixed rate loan to the 50-year loan. I do not recommend a 50-year loan to any of my clients, because what is actually happening is you're probably paying more interest over the long run. And I would actually want to sit down and look at a good faith estimate for the loan, a truth in lending statement for the loan, and an amortization schedule, and actually see how much you'd be paying in interest on that loan, even though you're only going to be there in it for a couple of years. Because what people have forgotten in this kind of boom economy with homes is they've forgotten the old way of paying, or actually gaining equity is actually paying down the principal of your home loan, excuse me.
Carl Case, a 50-year mortgage, who gets those? Who will a bank give that to? I mean, if you're 30 years old when you get it, you'll be 80 when the 50 years is up, if you're lucky enough to be around at all.
Well, they gave a lot of them in Japan in the decade and a half ago.
And we know what happened to the housing market there.
It exploded the housing market, and it ultimately crashed and led to 10 years of decline in Japan.
Tough. Let's get a call from Bob in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
We're well, Bob.
Listen, I wanted to comment on the balance of risk that's involved here. You know, with a conventional 15 or 30-year fixed-rate mortgage,
mm-hmm.
both sides are taking a risk on what the economy is going to be doing 15, 30 years down the road.
Right.
With an adjustable rate, only the consumer is taking a risk. There's no risk at all to the lender.
What about the consumer who can't find any other way onto the bandwagon, into home ownership?
Well, that's another point. I think there's a lot of folks who mm-hmm. want to buy too much house. Buy what you can afford instead of what you want, and build things up over time. When my wife and I got married in 1968,
mm-hmm.
the first house we moved in was a little three-room mill village house, basically. My rent was $44 a month. I made $95 a week.
Yeah, okay.
Okay?
Yep, yep.
Now, you know, I have been able, over the years, to build things up. I've sold a home that I'm holding the mortgage on.
Mm-hmm.
I own my own home. I'm building another home.
So go a step at a time. Don't push it, you say.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm, you know, and I have a piece of rental property. What I'm trying to do is prepare myself for retirement. I'm not a spring chicken.
But it sounds like it's worked out pretty well for you, and you didn't fall into a variable rate trap along that path. I've got a break coming up here, Bob, but I'm glad for your story. Chris, that sounds like advice you'd like to give your clients in Colorado. Are they prepared to listen to that these days? Get a smaller home.
Well, actually, no. And it's one of the things I teach a home ownership class to. Probably, I see about 700 to 800 people a year.
Mr. Hudak, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
We're joined right now from Vienna, Virginia, by June Fletcher. She's a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, writes the House Talk column for realestatejournal.com. She's author of House Poor, Pumped Up Prices, Rising Rates, and Mortgages on Steroids, How to Survive the Coming Housing Crisis. June Fletcher, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi.
I know you and Carl Case are old pals.
Yes,
Carl,
we're
June.
Old friends.
June, Carl.
Hey, June, how are you?
Nice to see you.
June, you came out with this book last year. Is that housing crisis still coming?
Well, I think the crisis is already here. It looks like housing prices have started to stagnate or in some places fall starting around November of last year. And I think what's happened is a lot of people who were having bidding wars and, you know, trying to get into a house at any price
mm-hmm.
are now sitting on the fence. And you have inventory levels going up, you know, five times what they were last year in some markets around the country. You know, hot places like Naples, Florida, where I happen to have a second home, you know, you couldn't get into a house. Back in 2004, I had to buy my place sight unseen at about an hour after it went on the market. Now you have your choice. And this is a good thing for buyers. But, of course, if you're a seller, it's really terrible. I went to out to Loudoun County, Virginia. I went to one street. It was about an eighth of a mile long. There were five houses for sale.
In an eighth of a mile. That's not very long.
In an eighth of a mile. And they were all really nice, relatively new, upscale houses. So It's good for buyers, but it's not so good for sellers.
I don't see the headlines yet saying housing crisis. Are you saying it's here, but we just haven't acknowledged it?
Well, you know, what's happening is because mortgage rates have been, you know, historically low, that's been propping up the housing market. And it's been propping it up for some time. One thing that the Chip Case talks about, we used to work together on a quarterly home price forecast.
Right.
You know, it's what the housing market does is really, you know, typically, it's job growth that really fuels what's happening in the housing market. And yet, you know, housing, even though things have cooled down, you know, you're not seeing in many markets, you're not seeing the you know, tremendous crashes that some people anticipated. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that mortgage rates are still relatively low.
Now, as rates do go up, though, and adjustable rate mortgage holders face that music, do you see that as the kind of burning fuse here in the American housing market?
Absolutely true. I really think that is what's going to happen. And a lot of people, I was listening to the tail end of your last panel, and I couldn't agree more with everything they said. You know, what's happened is a lot of people got into too much house. And got a, you know, they were so panicked that they took on mortgages, especially things that I think people really should not consider, which is option arms for most people anyway, option arms and interest only loans, which were really pushed to people who shouldn't be getting them with subpar credit.
Right.
And you know, now federal regulators are trying to talk lenders into not doing that. But I still, in my mailbox, I get spam from mortgage lenders every week saying, you know, how would you like to take a 1.2% loan? And they, of course, none of the, you know, if you don't read the fine print, you know, you don't realize you can wind up upside down in your loan, owing more on the loan than the house is worth. But I am completely in agreement that you should not buy too much house. And interestingly enough, the National Association of Home Builders talked about home. They had home of the future forecast,
mm-hmm.
and they talked about home sizes, which grew tremendously from 1985 to about 2001. Just tremendous 1,000 square foot growth,
right.
Every year higher and higher. Now, since about 2001, it started to level off, and they predict that home sizes are going to stay in the 2,300 to 2,500 square foot level for the next 10 years. And this is largely because baby boomers are starting to downsize, but also the next demographic push is going to come from first-time home buyers.
And maybe a little goodbye to the McMansion blow-up trend for a while here. Let me take a call, if I may. We've got a lot of listeners who want to join us from Anchorage, Alaska. Scott's on the line. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
How you doing? I appreciate you taking the call. One thing, I agree with everything the young lady just said, almost 103%. The thing that has got me, the auto industry is doing exactly the same thing. They'll get you zero down, 0% for 3 years, then a balloon payment on interest, and they're now financing cars 7, 8, 9 years. I remember when I was younger, 3 years was the norm. Maybe if your credit was fantastic, they'd go 4, but now this is just ridiculous. And somebody has to pay the piper on the other end.
You're going to be driving a clunker by the time you get your car loan paid off if it's 9 years. Scott, let us pick that up, and thanks for your call from Anchorage. Carl Case, how about it? Where risk is falling here, and who's pushing that risk?
Well, there's two things about risk. First of all, what's likely to happen to the economy? What risks do we face? Here, I think with demand dropping, sellers holding out, you're getting fewer agreements, a lot less economic activity, and there's not going to be home sales is going to drop and starts are going to drop.
A lot more houses just
right,
sitting
so
there.
The real worry right now is for declining employment. Construction employment's at an absolute peak all over the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
And when that number starts to drop, it can drop quickly. It dropped from 150,000 down to 65,000 in the last cycle. So my worry as far as crisis is concerned is that we see these agreements not being reached, people not being able to sell their houses because they're holding out for higher prices, and a decline in the volumes, not necessarily prices right away.
And that translating into job loss and economic trouble.
Exactly right.
Now, what about the bigger picture of risk here? What took us to this? Was it just, First-time home buyers desperate to get into the market and, you know, willing to pay, take whatever tool they could get to get there with the adjustable rate.
I think that's right. People have seen these low rates for a long period of time. Alan Greenspan was pushing variable rate mortgages, and I think it relates to what one of the earlier callers said. In a variable rate environment where people take out variable rate mortgages, the homeowner themselves bears the risk. But the risk is transferred to the banks in a fixed rate environment, right?
So why was Greenspan pushing for homeowners to pick up the risk?
Well, you go back to the S&L crisis. It was banks sitting on those fixed rate mortgages that got in trouble when short-term rates went up. So if in a fixed rate environment, you're protected as a homeower from rising rates.
But the banks are vulnerable. Greenspan, what, trying to turn that around to protect the banks?
Sure. The last thing he wants is a banking crisis. The last thing he wanted was a banking crisis. So transferring the risk onto homeowners, getting people to take these variable rate mortgages was, in a sense, good for the banking system because it took the banking system out of the rate risk.
Cut their risk, but now here we sit with the risk shared all around. Eileen's calling from Davenport, Iowa. Hi, Eileen, you're on the air.
I've sold real estate long ago in my lifetime. I'm now retired.
Mm-hmm.
And what concerns me today is that mortgage companies, particularly mortgage brokers, and they, I guess, work for banks or buy mortgages, or give mm-hmm. mortgages to banks, they are pushing zero down and sometimes 105% of the value of the property to naive young people who think, oh, this is great. I can now furnish the house and everything I ever wanted because I have an extra 5 or 10% of the value of the house.
So are they doing them a favor or handing them a curse?
They're handing them a curse because costs of running a home keep going up, fuel, power, everything. And people are just not aware of what they're getting into. And, of course, TV and magazines push that you must have the mansion and you must have everything. And I think we have to get back to earlier times when people saved to put down 10% or 20% on a home and then waited to get the massive TV and the big fancy kitchen and so on. And people are really getting into trouble. I know of them, particularly young people.
A little patience you're recommending here, and we hear the voice of experience there, Eileen. Thank you very much for your call. June, what about the banking industry's kind of turning itself into pretzels to offer all kinds of new loans here? Have they gone too far?
Well, I agree completely, and I do. Everything that she said is true. I think we need to start going back to old-time values. There was this push, certainly when I first started to buy my house back in the 1980s, you needed a 10% down payment, and it was a real obstacle for a lot of people to get their first homes, just you had to have 10% down. So they got rid of that obstacle. Now you can get 100% financing, but it's not necessarily a good thing because if you don't have any equity in your home, if something goes wrong, you have less incentive to pay your bills and more incentive just to sign the deed over to the bank. And, I worry sometimes whether we're going to have the same sort of foreclosure crisis that we had in the early 90s. That's the biggest, the biggest problem. We have the highest home ownership rate in history, but a lot of the people who own these homes are people with very shaky credit and maybe are people who'd be better off renting. Also, keep in mind that rents, as these inventory levels grow, rents are definitely going to fall, especially in some of these very hot markets where people had a hard time buying a house because mm-hmm. the prices were going up so much. As these houses sit on the market and people can't get those top prices they wanted, they're going to rent them. And the rental inventory for single-family homes, it's going to increase tremendously, and there are going to be wonderful bargains. I mean, even in our market, in the Washington, D.C. market where I am, people are throwing in plasma TVs, all sorts of things, free exercise club memberships. So, some people are even selling their houses now, figuring that they're going to rent for a while. I know some economists that are doing this. You're going to rent for a while and, wait for housing prices to fall and then buy houses cheap again. I mean, that is one strategy.
Might have been even better if one had sold a year or two ago. Carl?
I want to make a little point. I mean, it's ironic that a decade ago we worried a lot about depriving low and moderate income households of access to the housing market.
Yes, because there's so many advantages given to homeowners.
Owning a house is terrific if prices are going up and you can accumulate wealth and you do great. So we opened up the housing market explicitly for low and moderate income people to take advantage of the benefits of homeownership. It's not such a big advantage if prices fall and you get into trouble.
If that's what we're looking at. Mary's calling from East Amherst, New York. Hi, Mary, you're on the air.
Hi. My daughter is in Boston. She's a teacher, and her husband is in academics. And of course, at that job level, they don't make a fortune.
But they live in a city with pretty high housing costs.
Well, they want to buy in Arlington because they have a baby, and the median price is $525 for just an ordinary house. I've been looking online. And I saw one that's $335,000 for a three-room house with no basement and no garage.
Oh, so would you suggest that they get a variable rate mortgage?
They'd just love to have any mortgage, but they and of course they're stuck with $2,000 a month rent. Mm-hmm. So they're really in a catch-22 situation, and they're afraid to buy because of the falling market, and get stuck with high payments, and yet they don't want to be paying their landlords' boat payments.
June, what's your advice to Mary's daughter?
I would say rent a while. Stay, you know, even first of all, you'll be able to get more. I don't know where they are in their lease, but I think you're going to be able to get more bargains on rentals for now. And I think the rule of thumb is what a previous somebody said on your show previously is that if you can't afford to buy it, don't.
But she doesn't have that rental bargain yet. A couple thousand a month is no steal.
But I think in a few months' time, there's going to be a lot more choices in the rental market.
Wow! Wow!
And also, you know, in terms of we're talking about ARMs. I'm looking at the bank rate. Weekly rates for last week, ending July 26th. 30-year fixed rate was 6.77%. A 5-year ARM was 6.47%. 15-year fixed is 6.39%. So that's not a very big spread.
No, maybe not worth that little spread.
Not worth getting an ARM.
To carry that risk.
But I would say if you can't really afford a fixed rate loan, a 30-year, and also I'm very disturbed about these 40 and 50-year mortgages, because you know it's not that most people stay in their houses only about 9 years, so most people aren't going to sit out that entire mortgage, and you can of course refinance. But these rates are still pretty low, so it looks like they're not going to get much higher, too much higher between now and the end of the year. So I think that there's no reason to try to jump into a situation immediately now.
Let me get one more quick caller here, if I may, from New York City. Greg, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm pleased that I stayed out of the market. In 2000, I said, whoa, the market is way too hot, and it kept on going up.
Yes, it did.
And I looked like a fool. I felt like a fool. And I finally think that I'm going to be vindicated, because I saw this whole bubble as being the flip side of a liquidity-induced bubble. So people just got easy money. And
so you think it's coming around your way? You're going to have a chance to buy at a bargain soon?
I think so. But the reason why is in New York, the housing stock is mostly co-ops, and you can't get by with less than a 20% down payment. And
right.
That's what kept me out.
So maybe coming your way. Greg, our time is short. Carl Case, what about to Greg and others sitting out there not in the housing market? Are things turning their way?
Well, certainly demand is dropping and there's downward pressure on prices. But there's some positive things, too. International demand is huge in New York City and other parts of the country. There's no way to predict what it's going to do.
But foreign buyers who want to own real estate in New York.
The baby boomers are not ready to quit yet either. They're they're behaving toward housing as they used to behave toward television sets and cars.
They still want it big they want to be with it.
They want more than one,
right.
And more than two. So the demographics are not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Interest rates are still relatively low.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we're going to see a complete collapse of prices, although the pressure is certainly downward, and there's been a sea change in this year from previous years.
June, your final advice to the homeowner, to the home buyer?
I would say exactly what some of your former panelists said is don't buy anything that you can't afford. If you could comfortably afford it, then that's fine. I also think that wait a few more months, because I think prices are even going to get better.
We've got change in the air. June Fletcher at the Wall Street Journal, author of House Poor. June, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Carl Case, professor of economics at Wellesley College. Carl Case, thanks a lot for joining us.
It was fun, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.